Good morning, bro. It's Monday. It's episode 3 of New Month Hoodies. I'm joined again by my co-host, Mvu. Say something, Mvu. Say what's up.
What up? We're back.
We're tired.
Organizing takes and our opinions. Yeah. We hope everybody actually does feed into what we actually say. And remember, it's an opinion at the end of the day.
Yeah. An opinion that is hopefully informed by stats and statistics above anything else, but an opinion. So to chance for us to have a conversation again about important topics. We're a bit tired. It was Durban July this weekend.
Yeah.
And for some reason, we thought we could do that and this. So bear with us. Our voices sound like we've been at Durban July all weekend.
Yeah.
So yeah. Starting off is the situation in Sudan. Good news. The situation in Sudan seems to have almost subsided. It's calmed itself down. But it must be stated that they're in a bit of a crossroads right now in the country, because they're looking a lot more like the countries that they didn't want to be like when the protests were taking place. And that is countries like Egypt and Libya and all those other I don't know how to put this, Sharia law run countries that had revolutions and then had the same people that were in the old administration be a part of the new administration. Same thing's happening in Zimbabwe. But updates are, right now, as I speak to you, the Sudanese Military Council and opposition have decided to have a power-sharing committee where both sides share power. And me and Vu want to talk about the Pray for Sudan movement and what I think some of the issues are with having movements like this in the first place. But I wanted to give you an update on what's happening, and so far it's good. I don't know, Vu. What do you know about the protest as best as you can? Besides, I mean, the 100 people that have passed and all that stuff.
I mean, all I know about the protest is there's a lot of people who've joined together in basically the Pray for Sudan movement.
Yeah.
Which, don't get me wrong, it's all well and good.
Yeah.
The only problem with that is we're not doing anything.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We live in such a technological age, and people think that that only affects our social lives, but it even affects our humanity to a degree.
Yeah.
And that we're not even making certain movements to help people the way we're actually supposed to.
I saw someone put up a post. They were saying something along the lines of, stop judging us for doing the whole Pray for Sudan, changing our DPs blue thing. We're doing something to help. And I would never be upset with someone that decided that this is how they wanted to help. My problem is that when you're doing something that feels like you're helping, the endorphins and the dopamine fix that you get is the exact same as if you actually helped people. And when it comes to hashtag activism, it very rarely works. And I don't know if we would be as excited about that if it was the other way around. I'll give you a prime example. In the 1980s, in Europe, mainly in England, there was something called the AAM, right? The anti-apartheid movement. It was in Britain. 10,000 people were protesting very rigorously against their government, who was in very much support of the old regime. And the same thing happened in the States with Reagan. They got up and they marched to where the Prime Minister stayed and to the White House, and stood outside their gates and held multiple protests asking their governments, what are you doing about South Africa? Reagan specifically said that him being kicked out or him being forced to put sanctions on SA would be the one thing that he wouldn't want to do if it was up to him. But next thing you know, Russia and America, who by the time was still going through the end remnants of the Cold War or whatever, decided, let's all sanction this country because our people have come to our boom gates and they're screaming at us. That's what happens when people actually go out and make a difference and make the effort it takes to actually speak to the government, as opposed to doing hashtag activism. Because I can guarantee right now, we wouldn't feel really good if instead of having people go to their governments and scream at their doorsteps, all they did was change their DPs green and write Pray for SA.
We're very privileged.
Yeah.
I feel, especially in South Africa, I hate how people, how we've actually neglected the history that we've come from.
Yeah.
Because I think being in the newer generation, we really missed the bulk of what exactly happened during our time.
We kind of grew up in a space where there wasn't a lot of freeing to do. There wasn't a lot of colonization to overrun. So we don't really know how to get rid of it when it comes apart.
Yeah.
You need to get boots on the ground. Fees Must Fall was a big deal because guess what the students did? They went to Parliament. And across the country, what did we all do? We marched, looked our government in the face and said, hey, what's going on? You force them to address an issue that we think they should be involved in on a legislative agenda, or maybe just when it comes to foreign affairs, and you actually get movement, just like what happened in the States with us. I'm telling you now, South Africans would have felt some type of way if we were going through apartheid and all they did after the Sharpeville massacre was put a green DPs and say, Pray for SA.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have felt like they were doing anything. They wouldn't have felt like it was enough.
What we need to learn especially here, being in South Africa, being the newer generation, is that things were done.
Yes.
They were actually, there was no social media. People also need to understand social media was also kind of prevalent then.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much.
Chat rooms online, online chat rooms and stuff like that, yes.
I mean, we had media coverage. People knew about apartheid for a few years.
Actually, yeah, oh wow. And if someone tried to convince you that they were trying to spread awareness, you'd be pissed. Just like how right now, CNN is spreading the real information about what's happening in Sudan. So pretending like spreading, what is it? What did they say? Spreading awareness.
Yeah.
Is doing something in a world that is innately aware.
Basically, I'm going to tell you like this. If you ever put a blue DP on your WhatsApp, Instagram, whatever it is, all you were doing was being the news for everybody else.
Yeah, you were just reminding...
That's literally what you were doing.
Yeah, you were doing what we would have gotten if we were just on CNN, which a lot of us are in some cases. And the part that got to me the most, why I'm really frustrated, why I want to talk about this is that one calling a spade a spade. We treated, and we do this all the time, whenever a human being is involved in a massacre, we treat it like it's a ghost. Like in 2014, I think, 2014, around there when the Ebola crisis hit, Guinea was one of the countries hit the hardest by it. Guinea and the countries in West Africa were ravaged by Ebola.
Yeah.
No one said pray for Guinea. Everyone was going on about Ebola. We knew exactly what the problem was, where it was coming from, pointed that problem out and dealt with the problem. They weren't going there to go on their knees and pray for Guinea. We had doctors going overseas to fix what? Ebola. They were trying to help people survive what? Ebola. When it comes to South Sudan, there is a military leader that is in charge of all of this crap that's going on. And his name is Hamedi. There's a guy out there whose name is Hamedi. He is the vice president of the general council, military council of Sudan. That's the guy that's causing this. He is the Ebola in the situation. But instead of focusing on the Ebola, we focus on the people being affected by Ebola.
What I'm really not understanding, and I'm not appreciating, to be quite honest, is how, with the whole crisis in Sudan, people are losing lives, right? Yeah, they're losing lives. But just like any other thing that social media has made us take very lightly, it's made us take that lightly too.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody's seen that meme where there's a picture. Oh, it's a meme of a dude holding a cell phone, busy taking or recording him, or recording himself giving money to a poor person.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Essentially, everybody who's posted about, oh, this for Sudan or whatever, instead of actually, if we really want to, we're touching base with our humanity in a very light way.
Yeah, but the worst part about it is that we get all of the gratification of a person who really made a move.
So it's being fake woke.
It's like playing NBA 2K and feeling like you're really LeBron out here. Yeah, like you're really like, I'm out here balling. And it's like, no, you're playing virtual. This is virtual activism. That's what this is.
That's exactly
it's virtual activism. And I am not willing to go to Parliament or march because I'm lazy. So I'm not going to put the DP. And if you did, I commend you, and I really want to make it clear there's no judgment on our side about it.
Oh, not at all.
You did more than even what we than what we were doing. My issue was the number of people that don't know Hamedi, that don't know what's going on exactly, that don't know about Darfur, which is a massacre that took place in the 90s in South Sudan.
Yeah.
And that this is the same guy that was in charge of that same massacre, and that Hamedi, who's now in charge of the transitional team, was in the same parliamentary systems as Omar al-Bashir.
So he was within. With
this
all
is almost
the
trigger
massacres.
Man. Yeah, he's yeah, almost he's trigger within. Man.
He's the same guy. It's which points to exactly what you just said earlier.
Which is, if you
the
don't
same
call
guy
a spade
who
a spade,
was there for those, he's here for this very one right now.
And he's doing 100 people now, which is way less than he had done before. And to make matters even worse, there is no attention directly put towards him in a global scale. Could you imagine if you woke up in the morning and there was a hashtag that said "Down with Hamedi"? And the whole world was focused specifically on him, the Ebola of the situation. Not the country dealing with Ebola, but him, the virus that needed to be removed.
I mean, ask any celebrity in South Africa. Once the spotlight is put on you for doing something, you're under pressure.
Exactly.
To do what? Either change whatever it is that you did that got you the spotlight, or obviously keep doing it if it's good spotlight.
Now, guys like Hamedi are megalomaniacs. Sometimes the attention comes to them and they feel all special and all giddy. But it's impossible for your government to ignore when you're pointing specifically to a target that needs to be eradicated, and you're asking them, hey, guys that we elected to do this, what are you doing about this?
Exactly.
What is the AU doing about this? Is the ICC going to be involved? What's happening? As opposed to pray for Sudan. I just, as a South African, knowing what happened in the 90s with the protests in the States and all the Americans and the Europeans who came out and actually stood specifically to end apartheid or marched to force their government to sanction us so they'd end apartheid.
Yeah.
I just know it would have sucked for me to know both. To if I knew what we did do, and then I was put in a virtual reality world where I had to go back and watch us do hashtag activism.
Oh, goodness.
My heart would break.
Guys, we'd still be the same.
My heart would break. It would have been so much harder for us to get free because every single person felt like they did their part. And here's the last thing I'm going to say about this is, you know when you put up a DP supporting something, you're saying to everyone in the world, hey, guys, I want you to know that I am for these people and I'm for this cause. Mvu, what does it look like when you remove that DP?
I'm off that. Like, it's over. I'm
it done. Makes it look like you're
don't
done.
Bring it up. Like, it's over.
Like, right, it was a moment in time. Me fighting for Sudan was something I was doing, but I'm not doing it anymore. It's one of the issues that come with hashtag activism is that you put so much attention on something that when you move off of it, we all move off of it.
Basically.
The spotlight immediately depletes and we're all just kind of looking for the next country to pray for.
I don't know if people actually, if you notice the trend, but remember when Nipsey Hussle passed away?
Yes.
When Nipsey passed, it was like the music game.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Every artist was on some RIP to a real one. You know what it is.
Nipsey.
Now, they've shifted.
Completely.
They went from that to now performing, but now they perform and sell out because they're wearing a Nipsey t-shirt. Or a Nipsey, I don't know, it's a Nipsey banner.
Yes.
I'm not saying that these guys are using Nipsey's name to get, you know, crowds and whatnot. But all of a sudden, it's convenient for the game to come back, but it's coming back with a new banner.
Yeah, so coming like, back with something to kind of bring fans together with.
You get what I'm saying?
Now a dude who never would have worked at Nipsey has Nipsey's fans looking at him like, oh, you must be okay.
Oh, because now you really
you
mess
throw
around
in love
with,
to our guy.
Nipsey like
exactly.
That. And that's crazy.
Yeah.
So now, my thing about that is, when you do that, like, okay, we can argue that in that instance, they're being fake woke in a Nipsey Hussle type of way.
Yes.
And this is the final thing I'm going to say about it.
Yeah.
If you want to validate your intellect or your humanity through virtual interaction and posting something, and
we're calling it virtual activism.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And then you're gonna do it in a woke currency, right?
Yeah,
because you're trying to show us that you're very aware of the environment that you stay in the world that you live in, and that you care about it.
Yeah.
Understand something? There's nothing about you that makes you more than that in terms of. You put up a blue DP and you think you're making a change in the world.
Yeah.
You're literally feeding into this beast that is social media that has done nothing but guarantee that we regress as a race.
Yeah.
As a human race.
And also does nothing but confirm the fact that the moment we all decide to change our DPs back, the world stops paying attention completely.
And then Sudan, we don't... And the worst part is, one thing I have noticed about the people that post about, oh, pray for Sudan.
Yeah.
I've hardly seen those people that post up those things actually post information.
Like what's happening in Sudan.
Exactly.
This is how far they are now. There's peace treaties. Things are moving forward. Letting us know.
The pray for Sudan is a trend.
Yeah.
It's a trend.
Thing.
It's a trend. It's literally like if I ever wanted to be now seen as different, like if I was known as a superficial airhead.
And it's time for me to start doing some
and I need to start looking woke.
Yeah.
First step I do.
Thank God Sudan's in a pickle.
Boom. Ooh,
pray
Sudan.
For Sudan.
Well, thank
you.
Blue DP, where you at?
Yeah.
So that's what it is.
Hey, yeah, but look, that's all we have to say on the topic. Things are looking good for Sudan right now. They're moving forward, and as a country, I really hope that things get better for them. They've been under a really, really strong dictatorship with Omar Bashir since 1989, bro.
Whoa.
Since 1989, this man has been in control of this country, and I think we can always find a better way to make change a lot faster. And I think if we're willing to take part in changing this world, and we can allow ourselves to feel bad enough when we aren't doing anything, that we are forced to do something real, as opposed to getting the quick dopamine fix that comes with putting up a blue DP, the world will be a much better place.
If you want to try and show your humanity, appeal to it, or let it speak more through your actions, and I'm not talking posting. I'm talking actually being
active.
What we could have done as a challenge,
right?
I challenge the people that put up the blue DPs.
Yeah.
Get into a group.
Yeah.
Have those people march to our government and be like, yo,
Even if it means you find the actual people that are like heading the I'll put up her Instagram. She's a great young woman from South Sudan.
Yeah.
Who are heading the movement in South Sudan. Find those people on social media. Start a coalition with her. Ask her what they need, what they, the people on the ground, the young people need from you. Sudan is one of the youngest countries on the planet.
Dude.
Youth is like, I think like a good 60% of the people that are there are like under 25. It's crazy. Whoa. How many young people are in Sudan. Find the right people to talk to so that instead of praying for Sudan, you're actually helping Sudan, helping men Sudan, and Sudan can move forward.
I mean, and obviously being a Christian, prayer for me works like you actually pray for something and then you move in faith.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's basically what it is.
Yeah. Let's close it off. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Stop praying for Sudan. So, Cape Town is a bit interesting right now. There have been some developments. Sometime in either June or July, a report came out that there's been a... No, it was in June. This is called New Month with this. So this is last month's news.
Yeah.
There was a spike up in the murder rates of Cape Town. And there are talks between the government in Cape Town or those in charge in Cape Town and the gangsterism task force. Most of those attacks actually came from gang-related violence. And it's kind of put a bit of a limelight on Cape Town for those who put limelights in things like murder stats and those kinds of things. People that are relatively boring. And what this does is it makes me want to have a very honest conversation that I've been having with my family for years about Cape Town, that I want us to have about Cape Town. It's a mess and it needs real help. Vu, I don't know how much you know about Cape Town, but...
Well, man, I don't know. I just know the very general stuff.
Okay, which is?
So, which is basically, it's an elitist city.
Yes, that's, yeah, from outside it's hard to...
It has a lot of retired foreign money.
Yes, yes, that could also be true.
Right?
Yeah.
I also from facts that you shared with me earlier, I know that Cape Town now is one of the most violent cities in the world.
Okay, so here's what you need to know about Cape Town. If you didn't know this, this is going to be interesting.
Oh, this is going to be scary.
Cape Town is the most violent in terms of murder stats, like murder statistics. It's the most violent city in Africa. The continent of Africa that has a civil war every Thursday, like it's some kind of party. Cape Town is the most violent city in the entire African continent. There have been the top 10 most violent cities in the world, and there are 4,400 cities on the planet. This year, they're at number 11, but that's because Venezuela has an uprising right now. Yeah. Things are lit in Venezuela. Bread costs the same price as like a Porsche would cost here, and now Cape Town is at number 11, but usually they're sitting at number 9. This is Cape Town.
Oh, this is crazy.
It is the most dangerous city in Africa, according to statistically, murder rates. And the worst part about it is that if you look at Cape Town, per capita means like percentage of the people that are living there as opposed to the people that are dying. They're one of the worst countries in the world, but they have like also some of the most people in the world in the city. Cape Town is a huge space with millions of people living in Cape Town.
Yeah.
So for them to be top 9 for a very long time and now top 20 at number 11, honestly, I might as well say top 10. Might as well say top 10. Is ridiculous. And I don't know why everyone acts like it's not happening. Like, for all of the corruption
talk. All we see is Camps Bay.
Yeah.
Beautiful views, Table Mountain.
And when people complain about our country, what they complain about is corruption. Guess where we fall in the Corruption Perceptions Index, which is an index that I look at some from time to time. We're 65th out of 175, which means out of 175 countries, we are the 65th least corrupt. There's about 100 and something more countries in the world that are more corrupt than us. But there's only 10 cities in the world more deadly than Cape Town.
And Cape Town.
Just 10. You think murder would be our biggest priority? Like, you think we'd be out here trying to stop murder happening excessively. But we're actually trying to stop corruption, where there's 100 countries more corrupt than us. But in Cape, but when it comes to Cape Town, you can't even find 12 cities that are more deadly than Cape Town.
The interesting thing about corruption is it generally highlights, oh man, I hate attacking race. But yeah. It is what it is. Like,
in Africa's case, people are kind of getting money that they didn't know they could have. So a lot of the times you start seeing people doing the most
in African continents. Yeah. It's not like everybody else who was in power before them weren't doing it.
No, they were. They just made their version of corruption legal, so it wasn't technically corruption.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, corruption is like going around the system. If you just make the system terrible, then technically you aren't being corrupt.
Right.
Right.
And now the bigger issue at hand right now is that Cape Town is top 20.
Yeah.
And you want to go around and expose people for other things.
Corruption.
Like, if we really wanted to, we could make it a very political thing. And be like, Well, who's the party in charge of Cape Town?
Yeah.
I mean, you're taking care of one city.
Yeah, you have one job. Just you know the phrase, city. You have one job?
One job.
This is, you have one job.
You got one job.
And in that job that you're dealing with right now, you are and have been the 9th most dangerous city on the planet. I'm going to keep saying this so that people understand how ridiculous
this is. Oh, this is bad.
There's 4,000, more than, like 4,400, close to 4,000 other cities on this planet, and Cape Town is consistently in the top 10, and for the first time for a very long time, sitting at number 11. I'm going to keep saying it. I know I'm regurgitating it. And the reason why I'm saying this to you today is because there's another issue.
Crime.
Yeah.
Now, crime, as you said earlier, is actually a result of the income inequality.
Yeah, that's the issue. The issue that I wanted to bring up, my guy, is that the fix doesn't make sense either. Cape Town is a guy who had someone jump over his gate and rob them, who thinks the solution is to get a new padlock. Ooh. That's what Cape Town is doing right now.
Boy.
The guy didn't break your padlock, bro. He jumped over the gate. Maybe you need to get some stop-nonsense fencing up there because that's going to help fix something. Cape Town is conditioned to push the narrative that policing is important, or the only thing that one needs to do, or the most important part at ending all of the excessive murder happening in the city. But any sociologist will tell you that that is a joke, and someone who's going to push that idea doesn't care about fixing the problem.
I mean, what irritates me about Cape Town is, here's this. Remember there was that thing that trended about that girl who was sitting waiting outside for her job interview in Cape Town?
Yes.
And she got pulled up by the police, and she even got arrested.
Yes.
How are you, as a police force, tasked against stopping crime, going to pick someone harassing. Up? And harassing somebody for just sitting at a bench.
Yeah, see?
How many incidences have we had of suicide bombs in South Africa?
None.
We've had none.
We don't have that problem.
We don't have that.
Yeah, we don't have that.
And now, how many incidences have we had in SA where somebody typically in a different place that they're not supposed
to be in? End up having the police specifically get called to move them out of that area.
What kills me is, and I'm pretty sure this is what they do, being a police, being in the police and being assigned to a task force, I'd imagine that every morning you go in there, you have a meeting about what exactly it is that's a prevalent problem.
Yeah.
And you guys go out and you patrol looking for that problem and dealing with it.
Yes.
At what point is that more important than people killing themselves in the same city?
Yeah.
And this, ironically, this pullover situation happened within the CBD. Like
the middle of the CBD.
Like, you know, the cleaned up parts of Cape Town.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why they pulled up. She shouldn't be there. It's clean.
Do you get what I'm saying?
That's the honest perception that comes with...
That's probably the most blatant...
Yeah, no, it's terrible.
...form of racism.
It's one of those things that you see when you're watching American news.
Right.
And you just go, yeah.
Yeah, like...
But whoa, we're the majority here, what?
We're not supposed to.
And then you go, but not in Cape Town.
Oh, no, not in Cape Town.
No, not in Cape Town. I mean, it's a bit different in Cape Town.
And I love how in every brochure that you look at and they do that whole tourism thing, like, oh, come to Cape Town.
Yeah, yeah.
You never, ever see the other side. Cape Town's a very big city.
It's a gigantic city. Kukulele and Cape Flats aren't usually places that you're going to go to. I don't know why they don't want to show them. We'd like to go. But then they have to obviously fix those areas and make it easy for people who want to be tourists there to have a valuable experience and just to make the place better. The reason why I have an issue with the police angle is that, again, and this is an example. Do you know that if the NYPD took all of the money that they put into the NYPD and became an army, they'd be the 22nd most funded army in the world?
Jeez.
22nd most funded army in the world. Do you think New York is the safest city in the world?
No, it's not.
Yeah, which means policing doesn't really do much for dropping crime statistics. Another example, same country in the States. What do you think is more violent, Beverly Hills or Compton?
It's Compton.
Where do you think cops spend most of their time patrolling?
Compton.
So again, having police doesn't do much for eradicating crime stats. But then you tell me again, what place has got high income inequality in the States than LA? Where you have a Beverly Hills and a Compton? Nothing. They're really close. The problem is income inequality. Not poverty. Not having too many rich people. Income inequality. When you put people from the bottom and the top in close proximity, there tends to be a bump up in things like violence and thefts and murders. It's just something you can research. There's been so many papers written about this by sociologists.
It does something about their perception of themselves.
Yes. The moment you can find, or the moment you are close to something that you're told you can never acquire, the means in which you're willing to go through to get that thing, they expand and you're willing to do things that you shouldn't do.
Because you really actually see these things and you feed yourself with that hunger. It's like I'm hungry.
Yes.
And you put a full plate of food right across from me.
Me being broke is one thing. Me being broke standing outside of KFC is a bad idea.
Another thing altogether.
And that's what this is. You can't have a person who doesn't have, be in a place where everyone has so much and not expect something in them to, in certain instances, according to sociologists and statistics, something's going to come up and something's going to happen. Yeah. And that's why I'm so mad about this conversation, is because, again, they're having a nice conversation about the task force. Task force, task force, task force. They tried that in the States. Remember Compton in the 80s?
Yep.
War against drugs?
Yep.
Crack epidemic?
Yeah.
How'd that work out? Are they still not dealing with the Crips and Bloods till this day? Is it still not an issue? Is it not the community?
Do you know what stopped the Crips and the Bloods?
What?
Even for
slowed down, yeah.
A longer period than any policing ever did was a death of a pioneer of the streets.
Exactly. Everyone kind of decided, because there was someone who was trying to fix the area that passed away,
that
for a while have a ceasefire, because people that are willing to build a community are the ones who get the most change. If you want to make these places safer, don't throw police at them and pretend like that's going to solve it.
It speaks about your relationship with the community.
Exactly.
Which, now that we've mentioned that, speaks a lot about the people in charge of Cape Town.
Yes. Exactly.
Or the running... organize the running say party, because
we're trying not to be there. We're trying to make this a political show,
you know, but it speaks a lot
about the people that are in charge.
It really
the people that are in charge of Cape Town look like, if you found them in areas
you
where crime was rampant,
be involved with your community.
Yes, put it this way, the people that are in charge of Cape Town look like, if they were in spaces where crime was an issue, they wouldn't be there to stay. Right? 60% of the parliament, or the people that are chosen in parliament by the party in Cape Town, doesn't look like the people that need this excessive reform. We're the most unequal country in the world, and it is racially divided. There's no question about it. I don't care about your opinion.
Yeah.
Right? 1%, 1%, only 1% of this specific group lives under the poverty line. We're close to 40-something percent of the group that is involved in the excessive killings is living under the poverty line. 1% to 47%.
That speaks a lot about income inequality, like we just said.
So if you're going to have a group that only has 1% of its people representing the 47% of people living in an income inequality, you're talking to a person who does not know.
They don't get it. And yet, here's my biggest problem.
Yes.
How are you going to throw stones in a glass house?
Yeah, the glossiest house ever.
Bro, it's not even glass. It's what, bro?
You're the most violent city in Africa, and you're crying about dudes spending Fetty on houses like people aren't getting murdered more in your city than anywhere else in Africa.
Because they're being reminded of how much they don't
People have. Are legit dying at a rate that makes the continent go, what's happening over there?
Bro.
With and all these countries, with
the
all these issues.
The craziest thing about that, though, is we're not getting nearly as much coverage in terms of media on that than we should.
You know what the issue is when you're the one always asking the questions and the other side is always answering the questions, it looks like you're asking from a place of authority and moral standing, so people don't even ask you about your own
issues.
And
you know what the funny thing is, them being the ruling
party in
that area, I'd imagine that they have a certain level of autonomy in terms of how they run that area.
Yeah.
I don't think that the only thing they depend on is funding from the main ruling party.
Yeah.
But they have autonomy.
Yeah, I mean, if people are going to vote for you to be in charge of their space, and you're in charge of their space,
you have autonomy to run
that
space.
If something goes down, that's on you. You're the ones that are in charge of that area.
And we could argue that Cape Town's another country on its own.
Yeah, because I've heard people in Cape Town actually say that they want to segregate from South Africa and be their own country.
Right.
Which, again, is nice for the people that say it, because I know who they are. I know what they look like. And yeah, they live in the nice parts. So
basically,
yeah, great for them.
They can do that.
Of course.
But now what's crazy is, now when you look at how they're running that city, because you have one city compared to a party that runs how many?
I don't know how many cities, like 8 provinces?
Right.
I don't know how many. Most of the country.
You've got one.
Yeah.
One.
One job.
One job.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you're failing miserably at it, and the only thing that's sparing you is that no one's actually highlighting your biggest problem.
I think it's so funny that someone can tell you about their successes when they're the most violent city in Africa,
bro.
Like, it's gonna be so hard, and I hope it's gonna be the same for you too, for those who are listening, to hear Cape Town brag about anything that's going well in Cape Town when you could still get murdered in Cape Town more than anywhere else in Africa.
Yeah,
I think it should be like, yeah, but you know, it's still terrible because of all the murder. Because
I mean, like, we're 11th.
Yeah.
In the world.
Yeah.
Guys, like, even Sudan's not as bad as us.
I feel
Sudan
like
Sudan is actually having
Yeah, they had hatching. They had 100 people pass, and there's been an excessive shortage of people passing since then.
But we're still we still top them.
I know men will keep like repeating the same thing, right? We keep repeating that we're the worst. Thing, but we can't help but just be flabbergasted that this isn't the most important story in the country right now. Like, if we were number one at anything, or number top 10 at anything, you'd think we'd be paying attention to it.
Right?
You'd think we'd be going crazy about it. How is
that passing so many people?
I don't know. And my thing is, I'll say this too.
I hate how the conversation, in terms of income inequality and financial prejudice, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I hate how that conversation kind of like dwindled
away. Fiddled away.
Like,
away.
You know what I mean? It faded. Nice like, oh, well, okay, you had your moment to cry. Black people, shut that.
Yeah, exactly. Shut up.
So now it's like, wait, but this, if there was ever a time to really stress about it, look at this fact.
Yeah.
We're in the top 20 in the world.
And again, because we're number 11. Top 20 doesn't mean we're 19th. We should be top 10.
Dude.
But Venezuela is in a really bad place right now. Like, look, we're just going to close this off because we're just ranting about this. If anyone talks to you about policing in Cape Town, they aren't serious.
Really?
If anyone doesn't want to bring up how income inequality is really, really one of the big contributing factors when it comes to violence in an area,
ignorant,
they aren't serious. Willfully. Yes. If anyone is going to have a conversation about fixing this country and not deal with the most violent city in the world as one of the first places that need excessive reform, exactly. In terms of excessive reform, they aren't being serious. I think I'm ready to live in a country that's serious.
We'll
end that one.
So our next topic basically is about colorism. Where it stemmed from is Kayembao went on NCA and basically detailed her bleaching process and essentially why she did it.
Bleaching process.
Yeah, I'm just going to put it like that.
I like that.
So basically she highlighted the benefits of that. Yes. And one of them being that it's easier for her to put on her makeup.
Yeah, in the mornings. Yeah. Helps with gigs.
It helps with gigs. Yeah. And she personally said it's a personal preference.
Yes.
Now the cons of that, obviously she can't stay in the sun too long because of sunburn and things of that nature.
Yes.
However, the point that I wanted to stress and what I liked was she owned it.
Yep.
In a country, or especially in ours,
mm-hmm.
with a whole lot of things going on, especially with race, I mean,
internal struggles
and things like that, she owned probably one of the most taboo topics.
Yeah,
she
which owned is it, bleaching.
Which is bleaching.
She yeah, I'm owned, doing it.
She's like, yeah, I did it. She confirmed and affirmed every single rumor that was about her in terms of the bleaching and wasn't shy or afraid about it. Afraid of it. She owned it. And for me, that's... I think that's the strongest thing anybody in this country has done.
Yeah. How do I put it? Well, besides freeing us from apartheid, I know what you meant.
I'm just being
a dick. But the thing for me is I respect her now more than I've ever respected her. I watched that interview, and the way that she articulated her point and the way that she made her point was just incredible. She was very articulate. She was very strong, and she didn't try to frame it in a way that would make you feel comfortable if you're uncomfortable.
Oh, no, it was about
this. Just is what it is.
Choice, it's what her I'm life. Doing. It's what she decided.
You'd swear they were asking her what brand of bread you like to eat, and she was like, "Oh no, I'm a Sasko Sam person."
Yeah,
like she was straight about
in
it.
In a country where Sasko Sam is hated.
Yeah, exactly. So, right, where everyone's like, "Nigga, B&B." Like she was straight. I don't know why I know so many. So many bread. But anyway, she was straight about how she feels about this, and what this did for me, because I looked at the comments, is bring up the whole topic of colorism and whether or not it's an issue with black people and how to fix the issue and if it's a big issue. And this is me and Vooster take on this particular topic because it's
actually quite charged.
It's quite charged. But honestly speaking, when it comes to colorism, I have an inclination to believe that it's one of those cross is green on the other side situations.
Yeah.
Where if you are really going to spend enough time looking at why dark skin people have advantages over light skin and why light skin have advantages over dark skin, you'll find it. Just like if you look for it, like just like if you look at all the accidents and go, oh damn, taxi drivers crash a lot and like don't compare it.
It's like a girl who snoops through her boyfriend's phone.
Yeah, you're gonna find what you're looking for. And I think
when you see a like on a girl's page you don't like.
Yeah, and you'll be like, why are you liking this chick stuff?
Exactly.
Right? And it feels like like that's what's happening with colorism, yeah. in my opinion. Now, obviously, it does really show its face in our society, and there's a history towards it. I'm going to just go briefly about the history.
Oh, go for it.
Colorism in this country has started to be at least as far as we can look back to, a kind of segregationist movement to try to make lighter skinned people, or at least colored people in this country,
yeah.
feel like they were superior, to divide a group of people that could come together very well.
Still even relevant now.
Very well. That would segregate a group of people and make one feel like a different race, where they could have issues with one another that they wouldn't have if they realized they were the same race, vis-a-vis colored people are just black in America.
And create an inferiority
complex.
Complex.
In the more darker skinned people. And in the United States, it's something that starts it off very prevalently when slave owners, because if you're fairer skinned, you might have some issues with being in the sun. And being in the sun excessively for a long period of time, as opposed to people with like much stronger melanin or darker skin, that would put house slaves or whatever, black people in the house, they'd be fairer skin. And they started like, because you'd be spending more time with a specific brand of person,
you're gonna get to know them,
finding them more favorable than the darker skinned people, right?
You get accustomed.
Yes.
You like them.
Yes. It's kind of the origin of the, oh, you're one of the good ones.
Yeah.
When all it was, oh, you're just the only ones I'm speaking to.
And you spend time.
Yes, it became an issue because of those things. And that's the history of colorism in this country.
Yeah.
And obviously, when it comes to the States, which are the two places that talk about colorism the most, and I just think, I'll push it to you now, but I don't think it's as big of a deal, and I'll tell you why. But you continue.
I did mention this in the previous text.
Yes.
For me, colorism is really another ism,
yes.
That we really don't need, especially as black people.
Mm.
Mainly because we're already fighting so many internal wars that are way more important.
Yeah, and also external. We're fighting racism, we're fighting sexism.
The biggest ism for me is racism.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're still fighting that.
Yeah.
And yet we're going to put colorism to that. For me personally, mm-hmm. we do not have the time.
Yeah.
We as a people do not have the time to have this, he light skinned, or oh, she's light skinned, and oh, she's dark. We don't have the time.
We don't have the time.
Honestly speaking, a person is a person regardless of their skin tone. I feel like that's the most cliche line out there, but it's funny how some people are going to hear me say this and be like, oh, wow, that's cliche.
Yeah.
But the irony is, the cliche is the very thing you're ignorant of.
Yeah.
You know?
Just because something is said a lot, it doesn't mean that it's wrong.
It doesn't mean that it's wrong.
1 + 1 is always going to be 2. Just because you wish it was 3, it doesn't mean it's going to be 3.
And
just because you don't like hearing 2 anymore, it doesn't mean it's going to be 4.
And then I don't know why people think it's like a wisecrack now to go and make a joke about cliches.
Yeah.
Cliches just mean that, this thing is way more relevant than you think.
Yeah, it means it's tried and true, it's tested, and it's generational. And that's how why goes.
And I don't know if people actually understand this. When we subscribe to things like colorism and we sign into them, we give into it, and mm-hmm. we want to get into this war, mm-hmm. this very social centered war where we get on social.
This very social centered version of systemic self hate.
Right.
That's how I put it. And we're black at the end of the day.
Yeah, and we get into this, and we get into it like in detail and really about it. We're actually proving everybody that set the system in around us
that it works.
That it works.
That all looks working.
What we're doing continuously, every time we engage in these arguments and these conversations, is we're validating the results.
It's really hard to win a race.
So, I'm going to give you a plain example.
Okay.
When white people say, I didn't want to mention that, but anyway.
Yeah.
When white people say, no, blacks are stupid.
Yeah.
Like, why does he feel the need to want to be loud and all of these things?
Yeah.
And then you end up proving them right
when
you let a comment that they say to you provoke you to the point where you end
you
up
be loud raising your violent, voice you want to get loud, excessive. Right? And exactly.
When you know that you have the intellectual capacity to actually gauge that person and prove them wrong.
Or just laugh at them.
Or laugh
which
at
works,
them.
By the way, much better.
Right?
You're right.
But we're making a whole lot of stereotypes come true by feeding into things that don't need to be fed.
You know what it's like for me? It's really hard to win a race if you're too busy trying to trip up the guy next to you.
Oh my goodness.
It's hard to win a race when you're spending all of your time trying to trip the guy next to you. And colorism is like a black person trying to trip up another black person when the white guy is like right ahead.
He's
generations ahead of you, and you're too busy trying to trip this guy. One, based on color or complexion. Geez, just complexion.
That's sad.
Right?
Yeah.
Of color. And also, two, sometimes economic standing. And I don't, again, think we have the time.
We don't.
Now, here's some examples of what people say when they talk about colorism. Women in pop music, a lot of the time, they're lighter and they're fair in complexion. You have your Rihanna's, you have your Tinashe's, you have your Beyonce's. And my counter to that is, but then you can say the exact same thing about women that are winning Oscars in the same space. Peter, you've got Viola Davis, who's also the first black person just to win the Emmy for an Emmy for Outstanding Actress.
Yeah.
Right? Breaking grounds like that. You can even go into...
Also got Oprah.
Yes. Who is the richest black woman
on...
No, just the planet. Right? If you're going to go about light skin, dark skin privilege, if you're going to really go down that road, the richest black woman is dark skin.
There you go.
So the idea that light skin people have a leg up when the richest version of what we look like is dark skin, kind of a little bit weird. You could even do the same thing when it comes to acting with men. For all of the Oscar-worthy actors that are there, most of them are dark-skinned. Your Idris Elba's, your Samuel L. Jackson's, your Denzel Washington's. Sidney Poitier, like, pioneered and opened up the door for blacks. He's got three.
Talk about the most well-known in terms of recognized light-skinned male actors.
Mm-hmm.
It's Will Smith.
Yeah.
Top
He's standing damn near by himself.
He's almost by himself. There's nobody else who earns the same amount of money for movies than Will Smith in terms of light-skinned guys.
Yeah.
So now, like, if you want to make that argument...
Yeah, oh, but look... Yeah, you could easily say, but look which guy's making the most money. It's Will Smith, he's light-skinned. Yeah, but who's grossed the most money? It's Samuel L. Jackson, he's dark-skinned.
Basically.
You get it? You can just keep playing this really weird game where if you look for it, you'll find it. And I think we're really good at looking for what we want to confirm. It's called confirmation bias.
Yeah.
Where you kind of have this outlook in the world and you just look for people to specifically confirm these pre-existing ideas you have in your mind. And the reason why we do this is because we like to think that when we have ideas that they're good. And the only reason why we have to do that is because they're our ideas. You need to feel special for having a thought.
Yeah.
You want to make yourself feel good for having the thought. So what you do is you find people that are smarter than you, or people that can, or people that you think are smarter than you, or that you respect, who might confirm that belief and that thought in you.
True.
That's why a lot of the times people, if let's say for example, like I'm Methodist, like I'm Christian and I'm Methodist. My parents love the fact that Mandela was like buried by the Methodist Church, and that the Methodist Church is really prevalent when it comes to so forth and so forth. Because that's what they chose, and the idea that someone like Mandela could have been a part of that confirms to them that they made the right decision.
Basically.
So when you make these arguments or find people that confirm arguments about things like colorism to you, a lot of the time it's because you already have a precondition to believing them and need to find someone that's going to confirm
and affirm them for you. And it doesn't grow you at all as a person.
No, it doesn't.
What I like
if
about
anything,
what...
it just... What sets the seeds deeper down.
Exactly. And what I like about what Kangin Bao did is she began or she started the grown-up conversation.
Yeah.
The grown-up conversation was, it was a choice.
Yes.
It was a choice.
Yes.
Now, what that meant or what that spoke to for me was she understood the backlash that she was going to get for coming out on TV and saying what she said.
Yes.
One. And then two, it meant that she was okay with herself. For me, that speaks to her own personal growth to be in the space to say something like that.
Yeah.
Which then also points to everybody else.
Yes.
What are we doing as a people to get to a place where trivial things like this don't affect us the way that they do? Because I can tell you right now, I've been on Twitter long enough to know that there is a bias.
Yes.
When it comes to light-skinned guys and dark-skinned guys and the many different stereotypes regarding the two. Yeah, fine. You may have gone as a girl, right? You may have been with a number of light-skinned guys that may have portrayed certain attributes.
Yes.
But it just means that you just have a knack for really getting really sensitive, soft.
Yeah. Where you're getting all the it's all about where you fish, not what the fish is. If you're gonna be, I always say it's always weird finding when people complain that they can't find the right person to be with, and it's like, yeah, well then where are you fishing? You can't be fishing for great white sharks in America. They don't swim there.
Yeah.
You're gonna keep on catching something else. So you might just be finding light skinned guys in the club and then get confused when they've got I'm from the club tendencies.
Yeah.
You've got a black guy from the same thing, you get the same kind of tendency.
And the truth is, and it's not even the biggest thing with that is it's not even that you're dating the light skinned guys that's the problem. It's the type of guys that you're dating.
Yeah.
Like people really wanna be like, the truth is, yes, you are gonna give a light skinned guy a second look because he's light.
Yeah.
Right? We've been preconditioned to think lighter is better. That's just how it is.
I think it might even be evolutionary, but yes, yeah, you're right.
You get what I'm saying? Yeah. That's what it is. So now you're going to attack them also based off what you were told and conditioned to do throughout your entire life?
Yeah, no.
Like, now, just let that go. Because at the end of the day, it's about who the person is, what they're about, and let's end it at that.
Yeah.
Instead of making it a colorism thing, now we're literally taking two steps forward just to take four steps back.
Yeah, exactly. We're now in a world of many external fights having an internal one. Doesn't make sense. We've got work to
do. My question to us as people is, how do we expect to progress when we've got so much time and energy
to fight ourselves?
To fight ourselves.
I don't know.
Like, I mean, it's even in the Bible where Who was it? Jesus cast out he cast out a demon on this guy who was in a graveyard, right? Yeah. Apparently he'd been troubled by spirits.
Yeah, yeah.
So he cast out the demon, and the Pharisees came around him and they were like, "Oh, he's a devil worshipper. He cast out a demon." This is what Jesus said to him.
Yeah.
He said, "There's no kingdom that could stand that fights itself."
Yes.
He said, "A kingdom that fights against itself will eventually topple over."
Yeah, it'll fall.
So basically, you heard it from Christ himself saying that, how do you expect to get anywhere?
Yeah, it's not going to work.
If you're fighting yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
So essentially, when we're doing this whole, when we get through topics like colorism and things like that, we're fighting ourselves.
Yeah.
And us as black people need to get to a point where we're like, yo, you're black, I recognize you. If you have questionable attributes, then that's on you. You as a person have failed to grow to that point where this is no longer an issue.
Yeah.
But now to make it a colorism thing, very,
I'm not about it. Lazy. I'm gonna have the last word on this, and the last word is gonna be, when you look at the history of colorism,
yeah,
who kind of, not, I don't want to put it on one group specifically, but who kind of instilled the original roots of colorism in the first place. Having conversations about colorism in 2019, somewhat 400 years after the origins of some of these things,
yeah,
is like you and I walking to the bank together to go withdraw money or wherever we're going. Have someone walk behind you, flick you in the ear, and then you and I get into an argument because you think I did it.
Bro.
And that's how I want to end it. Let's just stop flicking each other. Let's just stop fighting each other because someone else flicked us in the ear. Let's figure out who it was, deal with that problem, move forward, and make bank. Light skin or dark skin?
Let's be about it.
I will.